Done with frizz? Say goodbye to that poof. Repel humidity and tame those flyaways. One drop, frizz stops with John Frieda Frizzy Serum. Your hair talks and frizz never interrupts. John Frieda Frizzy Serum. One drop, frizz stops.
Only from John Frieda.
Want to make your blonde blonde? Sheer Blonde Go Blonder Collection by John Frieda lightens and brightens hair two full shades to give you your best blonde every day. Your hair talks. Make a statement with Sheer Blonde Go Blonder Collection. Only from John Frieda.
You are Locked On Clippers, your daily Los Angeles Clippers podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Welcome to the Locked On Clippers podcast. I'm your host, DJ Foster. I am joined tonight by Jordan Heimer, who's coming to us live from Staples Center. Jordan, the Cubs, do they give us hope, us Clippers fans, hope?
They give us hope in the sense that their curse was always less a curse than 100 years of general management malfeasance. And when they started to be run well by Theo Epstein, a championship followed. So certainly I think it's always a nice lesson to realize that the process matters and that any organization is just good management away from winning a championship.
Are you telling us to trust the process?
Well, no, not necessarily. I don't think we have a GM you'd want to trust that far. But theoretically, if the Clippers had a good general manager, they could win a championship.
Sure. Okay. I guess that makes us somewhat reasonably optimistic for the future. So Cubs win. The Clippers, I gotta be honest with you, you're live at Staples Center, so you didn't have much of a choice. I was sitting at home, kind of weighing a historic Game 7 versus Game 4 of the regular season. So I watched a lot of the World Series, so maybe you can kind of fill me in. From what I saw, it was mostly just Russell Westbrook at the end of the game capitalizing on turnovers and the Clippers kind of falling apart towards the end of the game. Is that way off base?
No, you're pretty on base. There was almost a feeling here at Staples Center that, like, it was a classic 2016 double screen event. I was looking around the stadium, and I'd say a solid third to half of the people here were watching the World Series on their iPad, on their phones. There were cheers and groans during the game that had nothing to do with the basketball game. They were completely Cubs-Indians related. When Roger Davis hit that home run, it was confusing. I think for people who weren't watching it, they were trying to figure out what's going on in court that just led to that noise. And it was just an incredibly ragged game. The defense was solid on both sides. You know, neither team shot particularly well, and I think the defenses reflected that and were really kind of crowding the paint and just making guys miss shots. But more than that, it was just ugly. You know, Westbrook had 10 turnovers.
Yeah.
Chris Paul had 5, and they were really uncharacteristic turnovers for Chris Paul, kind of inexplicable, not quite sure who he was looking at passes, which pretty rare that you say that about Chris. A lot of bunnies just missed right at the rim for DJ, for Blake, for Chris. Just kind of an ugly game all around. Almost hard to take anything from it one way or another because it felt like 9 times out of 10, if you gave the Clippers those shots in those spots, they score an extra 10 or 15 points in this game and win easily. I know that's like a kind of a fallacy to think that way.
No.
But there were a lot of missed easy shots and a lot of very unusual turnovers.
We saw for the first time, not to do the very Clipper Blog Live thing of talk about lesser players before the big stars, but we saw Brandon Bass for the first time this season. Were you surprised when he got in the game?
Well, Blake got into quick foul trouble in the first quarter. He picked up 2 in about 4 minutes. And so it made some sense size-wise to go to Brandon Bass there, especially because it was a game where Wes Johnson, for whatever reason, was out of the rotation. I'm not sure exactly, you know, why that was a decision Doc made. It was funny because he got in the game, and you and I have talked about how one of the great things about a vet like Brandon Bass is he cannot play for 3 games, but he knows what he does in this league, and he can come in and do it and stay ready. And sure enough, his very first play in the game, he kind of ran, the screener, and then he kind of popped out for a 12-footer from the free throw line, Swiss. And I was like, yeah, that's what Brandon Bass does. He makes his living hitting mid-range jump shots, and he looked good. Although generally, you saw for the first time a downside of the Clips bench unit, which is those backup bigs take up space, but they're not real athletic. So when you've got Brandon Bass and Mo Spates playing the 4-5 together, they take up space, but that's about all they do. And they're getting just crushed by Enes Kanter on the offensive boards for the Thunder. No one really could figure out how to keep him away from the glass.
Right, and no one really demonstrates a lack of athleticism. The contrast, when you're playing Russell Westbrook, everybody looks like they're a 40-year-old man humbling around the court, right?
Look, you know, Westbrook just looks like he's having so much fun right now. That's the thing I was struck by most. You know how this was one of those games, and you were a basketball player, and I was a little bit of an athlete in high school and college. You know, you have some days where you just feel like you never get the good sweat going, and the adrenaline doesn't quite kick in, and so everything is annoying. When you get hit, it hurts instead of just bouncing off of you, and just
right.
You just feel a little jounced around all night. It felt like everyone was having that kind of crabby day on the court except Westbrook tonight, who just looked free and easy and doing whatever the hell he wanted to do. And it was really in stark contrast to some pretty grumpy faces on the Clippers bench by the end of this game. I mean, even before they lost.
Are we at a point where, and we've talked about this a little bit before, when do we start worrying about JJ? 3-for-12 tonight.
For me, it was tonight. And that's probably slightly hysterical. It's hard to find a more professional shooter than JJ Redick. But he looked off tonight. And you had mentioned, I think, on a previous podcast that what's strange about the way JJ is missing, it's not just that he's missing shots, he's missing them badly.
Right.
Well, JJ airballed an open three-pointer tonight. I've never seen that. I think in the 4 years he's been a Clipper, I'm not sure he's ever airballed an open three-pointer. And he looks tentative, and he kind of looks like he doesn't have the most confidence in his shot right now, and he was trying to compensate for it by driving and kicking and dishing in certain situations where usually that would just be a shot for him, and it didn't pay off. He also had a couple very uncharacteristic, unforced turnovers that simply came from trying to do things that aren't his game.
Right.
The heart of which seemed to be a lack of confidence in what normally is his game.
Yeah, from the little bit that I watched, there was a little segment where he missed an open three on a fast break and ended up making a three after an offensive rebound by Chris Paul. But he was still so upset with himself after even making the three for missing the first one that I'm starting to wonder if he's in his own head a little bit.
I mean, look, whenever we do this, right, it's always pure speculation. But I think he is, and I think if you kind of become the body language doctor, you see that he's not accepting high fives from all the guys when he comes off, you know, the court, you know, in that way where a guy is in his own head and he's mad at himself.
Right.
Doc seemed to give him, like, a special little pep talk before putting him back in for the last 4 minutes of the fourth. And not to mention, Doc didn't go to him as early in the fourth as he usually would. And you wonder if that's a reflection of Doc feeling like this isn't JJ's night.
Yeah, I mean, it's certainly possible that Doc's rotation, from what I saw towards the end of the game, got a little kooky with offense, defense. Jamal Crawford out there on a defensive possession late. I don't know, have we decided that we're okay with Luke Richard and Bahamute late in games when we need him to stop somebody defensively? Like, is that going to be a thing that you think continues throughout the year? Like, Luke as the defensive specialist?
Look, it's an interesting question, especially to ponder tonight, because the Thunder, right, have a similar conundrum with Roberson.
Yeah.
And at least tonight, and look, Luke is a great defensive player, it felt like the answer was to make up for being that offensively inept, you have to be as good as Roberson was tonight.
Mm-hmm.
Which is to say, amazingly good on the defensive end. I mean, Roberson looked like Kawhi Leonard light at times tonight. He was everywhere. He was forcing turnovers. He was guarding Chris. He was guarding DJ. He was guarding Blake. I don't think Luke Mbamute is in that tier of defenders. And I think if he's only in the second or third tier of defenders and JJ Redick is missing shots, then all of a sudden you can kind of understand or justify why Doc is going with Jamal there, because you need somebody who's adding some kind of space, some kind of anything on offense, because Luke really is he's a black hole out there.
Yeah, it's tough to trust him in any situation with the ball, especially when he's starting to try and kind of put it on the ground and make plays. There was a couple of plays I saw tonight where he's trying to go to the rim, and it's just, it's turnover city. But for the most part, I thought, at least looking at the box score, the bench held their own again. You know, played fairly well, but it's the starters that are kind of giving the Clippers troubles, and that leads me to a question we got on Twitter here from Aditya. He asks, what's your take on what's wrong with the starters?
I don't have a great take other than J.J. Redick is not making anything. And teams, in what I think is the scariest thing, is teams seem to be adapting to that in a way that I wouldn't have expected 4 games into a season. I would have thought that there is some collateral in the bank in terms of respecting J.J. Redick as a shooter. But it seems like right now this is the 3rd game in a row where defensive crowded the paint and made that Chris to Blake pocket pass really difficult, and you're not seeing as much pick and pop with Blake and pick and roll with Blake as you'd like to. The best the Clippers are looking right now is the big to big stuff. You know, Blake every game is finding DeAndre for a couple easy buckets, but in terms of what is the bread and butter of the Clippers, which is obviously the 1-4 and 1-5 pick and roll, it doesn't look the way it usually does right now. And I think a lot of that is the way that you get no spacing at all when you've got Lukumba Mute and an ice-cold J.J. Redick on the wings.
Right. You can't play three and a half guys versus five, basically, which is what the Clippers are having to do. That's my take, too, is that just the spacing doesn't look quite right. And Chris, people are putting bigger defenders on him, so he's played well, but it's making his life a little tougher. And you can put anyone on Luke at this point. You could put a 6-foot guard on Luke, and it doesn't matter because it's not like the Clippers are going to put Luke down in the post and feed him the ball and ask him to go score. So it's really at a point, and I don't know when the breaking point is. I doubt Game 5 is the breaking point when the Clippers are 3-1. But it's going to come to a point, I think, where Doc has to realize, okay, we're not getting the kind of spacing that we need offensively with Luke out on the floor.
I think you're right. And another thing you just mentioned there, which I also noticed, was, you know, there was a point 2 or 3 years ago where the bigger wing defender on Chris was a gimmick. Not a gimmick, but it was something that just a few teams were starting to play with. Specifically, I remember old Sean Marion did a really nice job, you know, in his kind of end of career Dallas years on Chris, and really bothered him. And now I think that's also something that's on everybody's scouting report, because this is the 3rd game in a row where you had a wing starting the defense on Chris. You know, Mo Harkless was guarding him for the Blazers, and you saw some PJ Tucker on him the other night when Bledsoe wasn't covering him, and now tonight with Roberson. It does seem to affect the way Chris is able to create space for his passes. You know, just that extra little bit of length, you know, bothers Chris just a bit. And it seems to make him a little bit more tentative to look for his own shot, and a little bit more tentative about threading that pocket pass to Blake. And obviously something he's going to have to adapt to.
Right, and it makes sense because Chris is a jump shooter at this point. The only way that he's really going to score at this point are jump shots. He lacks the explosiveness that he once had. I don't think he's taken like a huge step back from the last 2 or 3 years, but there was a couple plays tonight we saw out in transition where he just kind of failed to finish. You know, he's just not getting by guys as much as he used to. He can't finish in traffic the way that he used to. So if you have someone who's primarily a jump shooter, it makes a lot of sense to put length on that guy and make those jump shots contested. And the Clippers aren't at a point right now where they have a small forward who can punish that. Let me put this to you. If the Clippers had Rudy Gay or Danilo Gallinari instead of Luke Richard and Bamute somehow, do you think teams will be as willing to do that?
No, I think there's a reason that Rudy Gay has been in various Clipper trade rumors for years, and it's not because the Clippers actually have the assets to get him. It's because it's a pipe dream, and a guy like that would make, I think, a huge difference. And I understand, in a vacuum, both the guys you mentioned, particularly Rudy Gay, are like hugely critiqued players and kind of analytically disasters.
Sure.
But yeah, theoretically, let's say you could trade, Jamal and a kicker like Diamond Stone or Bryce Johnson for Rudy Gay to Sacramento right now, who obviously is in desperate need of ball handlers, I think you'd have to think seriously about doing it.
I'm going to ask you another kind of crazy hypothetical trade question that in no way would ever happen, and you're fine rejecting the premise here if you'd like, but I think it's kind of a fun exercise. If you traded Chris Paul for Russell Westbrook, would the Thunder be better with Chris Paul instead of Russell Westbrook? And would the Clippers be better with Russell Westbrook instead of Chris Paul?
I think the Thunder would then find their outside shooting problems that much more problematic, frankly. Because Chris is always going to be best when he has... You know, we've talked about in years past when we used to do Clipper Blog Live that Chris... There was some talk that Chris didn't love playing with Eric Bledsoe because he was looking to play with more of a traditional lineup, a traditional two, a traditional three. Same thing with kind of early chemistry issues with Blake. I think with the Thunder, he'd even be more frustrated, right? Like,
yeah.
Oladipo's okay. Robertson can't shoot at all. Steven Adams is probably still a downgrade from DJ, even though he's a really good player. I think the more debatable side of that is, would the Clippers be better?
Right.
That would be interesting, right? The Clippers would go from a team where the roster has always been a little bit of a question of, does Chris make sense with these guys? You know, is this an ideal roster makeup? To all of a sudden you'd have a team that is just pure athleticism, pure brute force.
Right.
Blake and Westbrook and DJ on a team would be... athletically phenomenal.
Unreal.
But
would they be better? Yeah, I know, it's tough. I want to say no. I want to say that there would be maybe some spacing issues and that, I don't know, maybe the offense wouldn't run as smoothly with Russ as it does with Chris, but I don't know anymore, man. The way that Westbrook is playing right now, he's legitimately, like, probably the best point guard in the league right now, over Chris, even.
Like, I also think that they're probably better all said and done with Chris Paul, but it's hard not to be swayed by the fact that, like, I just watched Russell Westbrook put up an effortless 35, 6-5 with 3 steals.
Right.
And, like, he didn't even play that hard. Like, he played 33 minutes, he took more time off than he usually does. Boy, he is a man on fire right now.
He is. I do think that, and again, this is completely hypothetical, it could be one of those situations where, like, a Blake Griffin for Draymond Green trade would make both teams worse. I could easily see both teams being worse making that trade.
Yeah, I think that's probably right.
Okay.
Neither team would make it, and neither team should make it.
All right, last question before we let you go, from at Clippers. Is Theo Epstein a free agent for the GM position for the Clippers?
Hey, look, is it D'Alessandro who crossed sports?
He did.
Now the GM for the Cleveland Browns?
He did.
You got to be impressed that I know that about football.
That was good.
But yeah, right? Management principles should cross sports. The things that make an organization strong systemically really are not limited to any one sport. Obviously, he's now won championships for the two most cursed franchises in the history of baseball. He's managed to kill what makes baseball great while doing so, which is its mythology. and he may as well try to win for the most hapless team in the history of the NBA.
Wouldn't that be funny? Wouldn't it be funny to just conquer all these... Part of me thought LeBron was going to do that at some point. And I guess he still could. That he was like, all right, I want a champion for Cleveland. Who's now the next saddest franchise that is, like, in despair and needs to win a championship? Oh, it's the Clippers.
That would be amazing. Like, almost like when WWF guys used to switch from... Like, remember in, like, the late 90s where they're, like, competing leagues and there was, like, Raw and...
Right.
I remember... What were some of the new...
Nitro. WCW Nitro. You had...
And WCW.
Yep. ECW. Yep.
But I would love that if LeBron would just, like, tear off his Cavs jersey and it is a Sixers jersey underneath. And it's like, trust the process. I've been loving what you guys did. And now I'm here to bring it all together.
He would. And, there's no better way to be the true people's champion than to do that, right?
And look, he's probably got like 5 or 6 more viable years as an NBA player. He could go a different team, different 1 year. You know, those 1-1 contracts that he basically invented.
Right.
He could sign one of those for like 6 years, six franchises.
It's really hard to imagine a LeBron James that isn't a productive player, right? Even when he is like can't move and the athleticism's all gone, like he can be like mid-90s, late-90s Magic Johnson, right? Like just slow and tall and just makes great passes and that's it.
And he can still play in the post.
Right.
I mean, you know, he's developed a great post game over the last 5 or 6 years, and he can pass out of the post. Like, if he wants to play until he's 40 or 42, it's hard to imagine he won't be productive the whole time.
Part of me just hopes he does, so he crushes every single record. He's at the top of everything. Like, he beats Kareem Abdul-Jabbar's point, right? Like, everything. Just at the top of the leaderboards, and everyone can stop talking about how taking him, you know, taking other players over him.
I just wish he was clutch, you know?
Yeah, right.
I just wish he had the clutch gene.
Ah, that's the one thing holding him back. All right, Jordan, we'll let you go. Thanks for coming on, as always. Make sure you check out Jordan and our buddy Andrew Hahn on the Clippers podcast, which is revitalized with you guys. Do you have a new episode coming up soon?
We're taping tomorrow, episode number 2.
So beautiful.
Look for that in your iTunes or on the ESPN homepage.
Yep, make sure you guys subscribe to that, rate and review them as well. We are friends. We are all friends. We all come from the same Kevin Arnovitz coaching tree.
Yeah, and you know, these markets aren't competing. They grow each other. It's like if you live in LA, you know there are 5 Ethiopian restaurants and they're all in the same block. And
right.
It's like, yeah, because that's where you go when you want Ethiopian food. What's good for one Ethiopian restaurant is good for all Ethiopian restaurants.
Exactly. Exactly. All right, thanks, Jordan. We will when's the next game? I don't even know.
They've got a back-to-back. They've got a few days off, and then a back-to-back against, I want to say, at Memphis.
Okay.
And then at the Spurs, maybe Wednesday and Thursday or Thursday and Friday.
Oh, I do see that. Okay. It looks like it's Friday and Saturday.
Alrighty then.
Friday and Saturday. All right, so we will talk to you Friday. Thanks, everyone, for listening to the Locked On Clippers podcast. For Jordan Heimer, I'm DJ Foster. Enjoy your day.
Takes a lot to get excited about a bag, but most bags can't save you 20% on auto parts. That's 20% off headlamps, 20% off oil filters, 20% off virtually anything you can fit inside the 99-cent Napa reusable bag. So tell your buddies, there's a bag they just have to check out. Quality parts, helpful people. That's Napa know-how. Napa know-how. At participating Napa Auto Parts stores while supplies last. Minimum 3 items. Exclusions apply. Offer ends 10/31/17.